Hello again and welcome to Worship Life Podcast. I am Brian Brown, and with me as always is our host, Mike Harland. Mike, coming
to you. No, you're the host.
I'm the host. Oh, then what are you?
I don't know.
Well, we've been asking that for years. You're the director of Lifeway Worship Resources, amongst other things, and the pride of Corinth, Mississippi.
Yes.
Absolutely. And we are coming, as always, Mike, from the historic B.B. McKinney Studios in beautiful downtown Nashville, Tennessee. If you haven't been here, you need to get here. If for no other reason than to come by and say hi to me and Mike, we'd love to talk to you. Today, we have a special guest on the program, Mike, and I'm going to let you introduce this young man because I think you have some familiarity with him.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the guest that we have. We have a student at Liberty University in the Center for Worship there, just finished his sophomore year, majoring in the worship studies area. His primary instrument is viola, but he's also a singer and a great musician, really, and pretty good looking dude, and my youngest son. So his name is John. We welcome John Harland. John, welcome into
Hello.
The podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
It's very odd to have someone lead worship with the viola. How does that work?
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Have you ever done that? Have you lead with it?
I don't think so.
Okay,
no.
All right. Well, the reason, Brian, and thank you for indulging me, it was kind of my idea to have this conversation with John, with him today for all of our listeners, because John represents really a very interesting time in the development of the church, generation to generation. John, would you consider yourself to be Gen Z, or are you a millennial? Which are you?
I definitely feel like there's some crossover between. I definitely see the social media effect that's hit the last few years is definitely gone. It's very prevalent in my life.
So the younger generations are really social media driven.
Yeah, and they're very technology driven, phones, iPads, all that stuff.
So you're inside the Center for Worship there at Liberty University, which is really an awesome school. I've been blessed to be part of that team for about 10 years now. Dr. Vernon Whaley has had me come in as a teacher, and a few years ago I became an adjunct professor, and so I actually go in every year. And actually this year I'm going in really mostly to check on you and make sure you're doing your homework. So do you like it when I'm on campus and teaching in classes you're sitting in?
Yeah, I think you do a pretty good job.
Pretty good job?
Yeah, okay. It's not too bad.
So, John, inside the Center for Worship, for the folks that have not been to Liberty University or maybe in a music department where the worship culture is such a driving force of the academic pursuit, how would you describe, what is it like inside the academic world where worship really is the focus of the degree of study? What's that like?
Yeah, so pretty much every class period, for especially the worship classes, we open up with a worship set led by students. And this worship set is usually about, 10 minutes long, one contemporary song, one hymn usually, or contemporary hymn that is like come on in a new life. And so we usually do that to start the class, and then the teacher will get up and talk about how, good things that the group did and things to improve on. And that's kind of like the main thing that we do in those classes. We talk about what we need to improve on, but then we'll go into scripture. We have a theology class where we will talk about worship theology and where we get our theology and worship. And then I just finished a course of philosophy of worship and how that theology that we talked about in a previous semester drives our philosophy, and that without theology, our philosophy really goes nowhere. And then in other classes, in other music classes, we spend time in prayer, definitely opening up class and integrating faith and learning and how all of God's creation kind of works together, and that it kind of just makes sense how it all works.
So it's an academic community, but one that it has a real spiritual focus to it. And it's interesting. And when I've been there, it's hard sometimes to make the transitions into the real academic disciplines. It's hard to tell when you're at church and when you're in school, and it's kind of becomes this really interesting culture of worship there. Now, Brian, I don't know about your pursuits of academically, but did you open classes with prayer? Was that?
I opened usually before I started jet skiing on Percy Priest Lake while I was missing some of my classes. I would say a slight prayer to make sure there were no
accidents. You wouldn't kill yourself.
Yes.
Now, John, here's a question I have for you. You also bring another perspective. Because you're inside the worship discipline area at Liberty University, You've been around church music your whole life. I've been there for that. I've watched that. And yet, ministry-wise, you've had a lot of experience in student ministry. Last year interning at our church in Brentwood Baptist, this year interning again, also serving at a church in Lynchburg, working in that student ministry there. So student ministry has been a big part of you. So you are a millennial, or maybe right at the end of the millennial, but your ministry has really been into this Gen Z, and in a worship and a discipleship perspective, you are watching the generations that are emerging. So what are you seeing? What do you see happening in worship as the millennial generation gives way to the Gen Z in today's students?
Yeah, a lot of what I see, especially in convocation, we have convocation Monday, Wednesday, Friday at school, is a lot of turning off the lights and just kind of letting your emotions go in worship, and not trying to hold back any, you know, things that are going on in your life, just kind of letting go of the world and just trying to, like, throw yourself spiritually at what's going on. In youth ministry, in the churches I've served, there's really again, most of the time the lights are off and there's a band going and they're doing a pretty decent job leading worship. And then you look around and some of the students are really involved. If they know the songs, heard it on the radio, listen to the worship albums. But also there's some students, you know, goofing around with their friends. So it kind of just depends on
the individual.
Yeah.
Sure. So would you say, do you see anything happening in the emerging songs that today's Gen Zers are writing, or maybe the new Christian artists? Is there anything about the songs themselves that you see developing in the next generation?
Yeah, let's see. Me and Mom actually talked about this yesterday, and we talked about how I just recently bought this worship album, and that this band has been, you know, throwing out albums every 6 months. It's kind of incredible. And so we were talking about how these songs, you know, really sound good, but after a while they kind of lose their touch spiritually, and we just talked about why that is, and we talked about how the theology in the songs, they're true, but they're not necessarily deep, in that although, you know, you get a kick off of it for a while, is that really, you know, it's not staying because of the they're just not very deep, and there's not a lot of theology in the songs.
It's interesting you'd say that, because, Brian, we've talked about this before. The millennial generation has been one that wanted more depth theologically in their music.
Right.
Then we've seen the rise of the modern hymn writers
that
have come out of the millennials. John is suggesting that maybe this next generation won't quite be that way.
Well, maybe a concern, John. I hear what you're saying, and I think a lot of people would agree that a lot of the songs – or certainly that's a common, I would say, a common criticism of some modern worship songs, is they're true, but they're not deep. So from your perspective, what your dad said, is the Gen Z, the youth that you're working with, not necessarily even your generation, which I agree with Mike, the millennials are seeking more depth in their lyrics. Do you think Gen Z is going to follow that pattern? Are they looking for more depth? The songs that they're being fed are shallow, but they actually would look for more depth, or do they enjoy the shallow song? What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I definitely think on the borderline, I definitely feel some of the things that Gen Z feels, and I feel the need to be accepting, and emotions are very driven in this time. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they really, there's some songs that are really popular that people love, and you look at the lyrics, you know, apart from them singing, and you just wonder, like, why is this song very popular? Because it doesn't say anything. And so it's a lot of how you feel, because a lot of students want to feel good, because in this time it's really hard to there's just a lot of trials going on in students' lives, especially as a modern Christian in high school. It's not popular, not anymore in America. And so they want to feel they want to feel good about what they believe in.
Right.
And that it's not just something that is long or goodness. I don't know. I'm running out of things to say.
I think you're carrying the thought quite well. And so the Gen Z generation, I, I, I would agree with what you're saying, John. I mean, I've made those observations too, and it's really interesting for me to hear you talk about it, because I can assume about myself that I'm just being old school. But to hear you say it, that brings me some hope that maybe I'm not just being old school. But of course, I was also thinking you might be a little old school for your age,
right,
too. So I might have had something to do with that along the way. but there's some danger there in there. I mean, I understand that today's high schoolers, most of them, many of them, don't have a mom and dad at home. One or the other parent's gone, or maybe there's a stepdad, or there's all kinds of scenarios that kids today are dealing with that even a few generations ago was not even on the radar. I mean, this generation is going to have to decide which bathroom they're going in. We didn't have to think about that when I was in high school. Not to be trite about that, but they're looking for a worship experience that makes them feel something, not one necessarily that informs their faith.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I think there's so many, especially with all the major conferences going on where there's high power speakers that are delivering theology, they're just kind of trying to get in the mood, I would say, for the sermon, and not necessarily finding their theology in the music.
Mm.
So.
And when you're talking about Gen Z, John, it strikes me that, Generation Z goes down to 12, 13, 14-year-olds. They don't have a lot of theological depth. I mean, at some point, their music has to be a little bit simpler music to reach them, because we don't want to be introducing concepts that are just beyond them that they can't possibly relate to. So as a youth pastor, a worship leader who's trying to talk to people who aren't spiritually mature, and you're trying to still get them to understand some of these things experientially that they will later understand, we hope, intellectually. What's the balance there? You want to give them their vegetables along with their dessert, and you want to be teaching them theology, but not overloading it so much that their mind is so challenged that their heart's not involved. So how do you do that with a young generation? Do you try to balance your song mix maybe with some songs that are deeper, some songs that are more shallow is such a bad word, but some songs that have a simpler theological perspective, and maybe mix in some that are deeper? Do you feed them all vegetables and just feed them deep songs and make them learn the theology? What's the balance there?
Yeah, I've always found that when a worship leader's explained the song, mm-hmm. and they've talked about, where this song came from, I think of the great hymn "It Is Well," and just knowing that background of that story,
yes.
It really puts a lot of meaning in that song. Especially for me personally, I find a lot of meaning in that song. And so whenever leading a song for youth or trying to, talk to them about what this song means, it's very important to, give them the background, because I think they relate to stories. Everybody relates to stories. If you talk to somebody for 5 minutes, you end up telling stories. And so I think it is very important that for this generation, no matter how deep the song, you help them understand the background, because out of this background, they can understand the theology, and really deep theological truths can be simplified. And so even though some of these songs are very deep, they still can be understood by a shallow mind, if you will. And that could help,
help grow their faith.
Yeah, help grow their faith.
Let me ask you this question, John. As a student pastor, how important is the worship part of the student ministry to you? What role does it have when you think about what you're trying to accomplish in making disciples and reaching kids and helping them in the find their own relationship with the Lord and then grow that relationship? What part does the music and the worship part of the student ministry have?
I think it's different for college and in high school. In my experience in high school, a lot of the worship time was kind of just a settle down time. Especially the first song was usually very upbeat, trying to get them excited to be there and maybe get some energy out, if you will. And then, as the songs go on, they get a little slower and just kind of get their minds focused on what is about to be taught. In college, it's kind of different because we have a longer time, a longer whatever it's called.
The worship time is a longer.
Yeah, the worship time is longer. We have a longer focus. That's what I meant to say.
Attention span.
Yeah. And so they can kind of do different things with the song choices. And so it's not necessarily trying to settle us down, but they are trying to focus our minds on what is going to be taught. So,
yeah, it's an important part of ministry. And whether it's students or children or adults, I've said for a long time, Brian, that music is one of the most powerful discipleship tools God has given us.
Amen.
And that would be true for students. John, I'm just really proud of you, son. I'm really proud of what God's done in your life, and to see you now begin to pour into the lives of students as you are in the ministry at our church, and then in the ministry there in Lynchburg that you'll be working in when you go back to school. That worship's going to be a big part of that. And I'm glad that you're grappling with some of these realities. And my request of you, and I'll say this on the podcast in front of everyone here, is help me stay in touch with that. I'm counting on you and people like you to help us as leaders in the generations that are older to understand what's going on with these younger generations, so that what we can do can be impactful and significant. And we're not just defending what we thought was the best way back when we did it, but we're actually sensitive to the emerging generations and how to connect with them.
Absolutely, Mike. It's so important. You know, when I was a young person, I remember being told in church, the ones who were sensitive to the youth, they would say, the youth is not the church of tomorrow. It's the church of today. And that's very much true. But another thing I remember growing up, I always heard, Mike, about the baby boom generation. I'm a Gen Xer myself, but the baby boom generation, how it was the largest generation in American history and how much impact it would have just because of that. Well, as we know now, the millennials have surpassed the baby boomers. The millennials are now the largest generation ever of Americans. And Gen Z is already, if you study the research, predicted to surpass the millennials as the largest generation. So if you add the millennials and the Gen Zs together, they're more than twice the size of that, of the great baby boomers that we've heard about all of our lives and their impact. So imagine if the baby boomers had such a significant impact because of their size, taking the millennials, the Gen Zs together, twice the size of the baby boom generation. And if we can turn them towards God, the revival that could sweep across the country and across the world really would be unstoppable.
And you know what? The emotionalism that, John, you were talking about doesn't really bother me at all. I think one of the problems of the boomer generation is that we were so emotionless. Well, we were stoic. We were in control. We had to keep everything here. I would love to see some passion from a new generation, excited about what God's doing and excited about proclaiming the gospel in worship.
Amen, Mike. Well, listen, John, thank you so much for joining us, John Harlan from Liberty University, and giving us some insights and some perspective from someone who's right on that borderline between the Generation Z and between the Millennial Generation, two large generations. They're going to have an amazing impact on the kingdom. So, John, thank you for joining us today.
It's good to see you, son.
Absolutely. Listeners, please keep sending us topics that you want to discuss. One of the things we've heard, Mike, in the feedback in the podcast was the impact of multi-generational worship is one of the reasons we brought John in here today, millennial, Gen Z, and how we're trying to involve them in worship. We're writing music that's mm-hmm. geared towards
yes.
involving all the generations in worship together. So thank you for sending those topics. Send us other ideas that you'd like to hear Mike talk about, other things that are affecting your worship ministry. As always, prayer requests. We want to pray for you here at Worship Life. And we thank you so much for listening to the podcast, for rating it and reviewing it, which helps us get the word out. And thank you for joining us. We want you to join us at our events, Worship Life, this summer. Come out and see us where we are at trade dealer events. We want to talk to you. And like Mike, like you always say, put a face with a name. And just continue to send us those prayer requests so we can pray for you. Particularly today, if you have some information about the next generation, millennials, Generation Z, that you think it would be important for us to know at Lifeway Worship, as we're developing resources, developing events, developing training, if you have some special insight into these upcoming generations, we'd love to hear from you here at Worship Life.
Yes, we would. Exactly. And we're working on events now, strategies for the next year, the next few years, about how to address student ministries in worship.
Right.
And then, of course, Sun Power, our event that happens every year in Orlando for student singers, getting them excited about singing and singing well and learning how to lead worship. So we're always interested in those ideas that our listeners might have.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us today. And when we come back next time, Mike is going to be talking about 10 things that the pastor wants to say to the worship leader, but he probably won't. And then for you worship leaders out there, don't worry. We're going to come back with a podcast after that that talks about the things we want to say to our pastors. So the next couple of podcasts, we're going to talk about that all-important relationship between the senior pastor and the worship leader and how they need to work together and how they sometimes don't. So please be sure and join us. Thank you for being with us again today on the Worship Life podcast. We love you. We're praying for you. God bless you.